This is the Higher Ed Tech Podcast, Season 4, Episode 7. What will the future of higher ed institutions look like?
Welcome to today's Higher Ed Tech Podcast. I'm Tim Van Norman, the instructional technologist here at Irvine Valley College.
And I'm Brent Warner, professor of ESL here at IVC. We both enjoy integrating technology into the classroom, which is what this show is all about.
Welcome. We're glad you're here with us. So, anything new?
Well, we're voting.
November.
Yeah, voting is coming up shortly after this episode, so go vote. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we're just in the holiday season. So, you know, we had our Halloween the other day. We went and did a little viewing of some of the nice houses that put up cool decorations. And
nice.
Yeah, that's about it for now. How about you?
Excellent. Yeah, for Halloween, nobody stopped by. So
yeah, it was weird. We were looking around, like, and it was kind of hard to find the neighborhoods. I think people are still COVID wary, right? Like not in the sense of like going out, but I think in the sense of like letting people come into their house or letting strangers approach them. Because what we did see was that a lot of the people doing candy and like handing out were outside of their house, or they were kind of at the end of their driveway. Like they had decorations up in that you could see from the fence, but like there wasn't a lot of walking into the front doors or anything like that. So maybe there's just some of that. I don't know.
Could be. I live in an apartment complex, and yeah, I walked the dog by one of the places, and a man and two kids, and then a woman came out, and they're all dressed up. I'm like, oh, are you going trick-or-treating? They're like, yeah, we're leaving.
Yeah.
And their house was completely decked out, too. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So
I think in the complexes, there's I don't think anything happens. We've lived here for however many years and never had a door knocked on. So,
wow.
So anyways, here we are. We're in November. Yep. No more trick-or-treating.
Halloween's over. Thanksgiving is coming up.
Yeah.
Yes.
So today, Tim, we're going to talk a little bit. It's not exactly all tech conversation. There's some pedagogy conversation. There's some infrastructure conversation, all sorts of different things going on today. So let's jump over there and start explaining this concept before we jump into it too directly. All right. So recently, EdSurge put out an article called, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes, MIT professors propose a new kind of university for post-COVID era. And it's a white paper from some professors at MIT with some different ideas for basically how the future of educational institutions might look with kind of this mixing of what we've learned over the last few years, what might be better ideas for the future, how collaboration might work outside of institutions. It's kind of this whole, it's a pretty big project, I think, at least in terms of this. They haven't built a school or anything like that, but they're just the scope of research and trying to figure out, like, what are next steps going to look like? So, Tim, we looked at this a little bit today and just kind of had some pre-show conversation on it, but am I explaining it clearly, like semi-clearly?
Yeah, I think that's really well explained. So basically, some of these, we're going to be giving some ideas ourselves, but this is coming off of this article and then the white paper that they had. And so some of them might not fit in community college. Some of them might already be happening in community college. That's what, when I was reading it, I'm like, yeah, we already do that. So, which is good, you know, that's a good thing. I think it's really worth going through and taking a look at what, MIT, you know, a large organization like that is potentially proposing, at least some of their professors.
Yeah. So the way that we'll do this, the structural, this will be a little bit different, but they had in the white paper, they had an executive summary, and we'll encourage people to go and look at the full thing. But I'll read what the minor like version of the proposals are, and then we'll talk about each one as we go through. So bear with me as I read through these. and we talk about these parts. So it gets into a lot of different things, Tim, like you mentioned. You know, some of it might be related to research institutions. Some of it might be kind of pulled from or for community colleges. It's all amalgamation, right? And so take it all with a grain of salt. And I don't think any of this is meant to be like, this is what will happen. I think it's meant to be kind of ideas, sparking ideas for, you know, for schools to start saying, well, hold on a second, like, what do we need to do? What do we really need to do? Like, because we can't just keep the status quo. We're seeing all sorts of issues with, like, you know, it's not just going to be the same forever. And so right. We need to start making these approaches and experimenting with some of these things. So I'll start with the first one here, Tim, and I'll read it, and then we'll see how it goes. So the first one that they talk about is rebalancing education and research. So these institutions, and again, they're just kind of imaginary institutions at this point, will be focused on educational outcomes. For faculty, teaching will be the focus. Faculty will be encouraged to spend about 20% of their time on research or practice, and to take sabbaticals at partner institutions, companies, and organizations. But promotions and career advancement will place the highest emphasis on teaching.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Like, for sure. That's where community colleges already are. I mean, community colleges really are, you know, 100% of your time on teaching. I mean, pretty much. Like, we do other projects and things like that, but at the community college level, we are focused on being good teachers, hopefully, as much as possible and all the time. I don't know, Tim, if you have thoughts about this at the research institutions, but I have always told my own students, like, every teacher that I know has always, like, considered the community college to be the dream job. Like, teachers who love teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, whatever these places, they have a name, they have a reputation for being a high level or an Ivy League or whatever else it is. But the students talk about their community college professors, right? The students talk about their, you know, like, the teachers want to be at the community college. It's this not so hidden secret amongst professors and teachers that, like, community colleges, and sorry to anyone who's listening from not the community college, but, like, but that's where it's at, right? And so I like this idea because I think this will do a lot more for students. They'll get a lot more value out of their time at schools instead of, like, oh yeah, my teacher was just someone who talked in front of the room and then walked out the door and the TA did all the work, right? And so I can see a lot of room for transitioning this and helping. And again, this is MIT, so since they're kind of talking from a research institution perspective, it would be interesting to see if those shifts start happening.
Yeah, I didn't go to a research institution, so I had professors for all of my classes at the university and stuff. But from what my understanding, that would make sense that people were, if you're interested in teaching, you're interested in a different level than a research institution, at least.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so next one, rethinking curriculum development and delivery. So these institutions are, and this is going to get into some complicated things, but residential by design. And they're going to talk about co-ops later, but it says, but teaching will be based on the flipped classroom model almost exclusively. The online content can be drawn from the many online sources available today and might be developed centrally at a major partner institution that could help not just create and maintain the curriculum, but also work with these institutions to fine-tune and improve the content. That's some interesting stuff there, possibly. There might be some parsing of the language to figure out what that exactly means. But how do you break that down, Tim?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you could argue that a lot of publishers are doing exactly this. Mm-hmm. They're taking content from that's put together by a respected source and then putting that together and making that available to all of their customers. I know that a number of faculty at our institution are looking at using LinkedIn Learning or something like that. And it kind of is doing that same thing, pulling the content from wherever you can get the right content for your course, rather than you having to create every word that's said.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think ultimately it'll be some sort of combination. Like a little bit of the mm-hmm. language here concerns me that someone else is going to be creating the content for your course. Right. And,
right.
And I think that's troublesome. But I think that if you're but we all do a lot of this now, right. Pulling in, here's a YouTube video that's going to help explain this to you, right. Here's a TED talk where we can see someone who has this experience explaining their thoughts on it. Right. And so a lot of this is already done, but if we're talking about like, hey, this institution, let's just say it's, you know, here in Southern California, we say it's USC, right? USC is now providing the modules of everything for Canvas, and you're just going to pull it in and put it into your course and then maybe fine tune it. I'm with you there, Tim. Like it makes me a little anxious because it starts to sound like what publishers are trying to do, right? And then right. It's like, well, where's the actual authority coming from in teaching this and in going through it? And my other concern here would be that it's just like a new version of textbooks where it's just like teachers are teaching out of the textbooks. Okay, teachers are teaching out of the provided material and not necessarily customizing or, you know, making it directly relevant to their own student group. And so some of these right. things are potential issues, just to be aware of. Right. Yeah.
That said also, I love the idea that they're looking at doing a flipped classroom model. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're talking about a lot of that stuff as well, is the concept of, what do you need your students to be in class for versus what can they get outside of class? And then only do the stuff in class that needs to be in class.
Correct.
So when you talk about class work, is class work sitting there taking notes while you lecture?
Right.
Or is class work working with your fellow students to understand a topic better, but you've already done the research outside of class to understand a little bit. Now you're just enhancing that learning.
Absolutely. And I think that conversation has been going for a bunch of years, and people are, it's a slow transition, but it is happening more and more. And I see a lot more people recognizing the value there. So, it was a big boom in conversation 10 years mm-hmm. ago. Right. And then it's kind of like, yeah, it exists. And, you know, and we got to get there still. So, okay, next one. Holistic curricula. So a holistic education is essential for success in the world today. Graduates need more than fundamental ideas and skills to apply them narrowly. They need to understand their context and implications and to be able to work effectively with others in an increasingly complex society. The curriculum must therefore offer substantive classes in the humanities, including arts and social sciences, thoughtfully integrated into the curriculum. Mm. So this one, I know that there's a lot of, liberal arts people who will be very happy to kind of hear this, that the liberal arts are not just being ignored for sciences and for, becoming engineers or all those types of, the harder science works and the STEM side of things, right? There's been a lot of concern around that. So I like that they are talking about integrating these together and saying like more is actually required in order to do this well. And then I think as we'll get into it a little bit more, they're really talking about linking the liberal arts work, so humanities or whatever else it is, directly into some of those things that are important, the STEM stuff, right? And saying, well, how does, and I think I read this in the article, they're saying, well, how does ethics connect with our programming for artificial intelligence, right? Something like that.
Absolutely. And that does make sense, especially when you have it in a way, taught in a way that enhances the program. Right. And that's kind of what they're talking about is as we get into the next one, especially enhancing the learning of the whole program, not just a class for a class's sake.
Right. Okay, so the next one is the degree as an assembly of micro-credentials. It says, we generalize the concept of majors and minors by turning the degree into a series of micro-credentials which are, quote, stacked. Each micro-credential is composed of courses, but the courses fit into themes. Micro-credentials can be better matched to student capabilities and interests than majors and minors. Put students in a better position for employment in specialized area and offer greater value to students, especially those who leave the degree program without finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this conversation has been going in lots of places. Several years ago, there was a book that came out, I think it's called The End of Average, and it got into this idea is like, why aren't we focusing in on learning small skills that are going to lead to a specific outcome rather than all of this big broad learning, and you might only end up applying, you know, some percentage of that, right? And so I do see value for this. My only concern here, which is my bigger concern also for a lot of community college stuff, is these types of things don't always allow for exploration, right? We have, all these programs at our school that are, you know, meant to help students get through and transfer and do all these things, but it's like, get through as quickly as possible so that you can transfer and get out and go to your real college. And it's like, no. For me, community college, like, this is where you should be slowing down. You should be exploring. You should be taking maybe an extra semester or even two to kind of think about what kinds of different classes might be valuable and interesting to me, right? What can help me get broader experience and meet different types of people than I would meet if I'm just always going through my one predetermined path that I had to choose when I was 18 years old and didn't really have any idea what I'm looking for from the world, you know? So I do like these ideas of micro-credentials, but I do also worry that, like, once you start doing them, you're like, well, if I get a different micro-credential in some different subject, that's going to throw me off from getting my degree. And it's the same problem we currently have. It's just, you know, it's not solving that problem. It's approaching it in a different way.
Understand. And I know that a number of faculty are doing that within their classes.
Mm-hmm.
An individual class, they'll basically do micro-credentialing in there. And we're looking at it, as you said, in other areas where basically kind of the whole concept of electives versus core classes.
Right.
It is the same thing at a high level, but I like that they're trying to basically indicate that you've earned a certain level before you actually get your final degree.
Yeah. And I'd like that too. And we have, these credentials in our own program. So I'm not like saying they're a bad thing.
Oh, right? Yeah, no.
Like they do, they are cool and they do serve a lot of things. I'm just I just get concerned that people find some of these parts as like, this is a solution to something. It's like, well, it's a solution, but you also have to step back and look at everything, right? And see what other parts tie to it. So yeah, good. And I do think that that'll be really valuable. I do like the part a lot at the end that says they leave the program without finishing, you're not kind of denying their learning through that, right? You're still accepting that and saying like, hey, you've gotten a marketing micro-credential, right? Like, you could probably start off in, you know, like, at a entry level position at a company with that. Right. And so I don't know. I think there's a lot of real good value potentially with that as well. Okay.
Agreed.
Next up is team teaching and course sequences. So faculty would team teach the bundle of courses associated with a micro-credential. For example, a machine learning micro-credential might involve courses in mathematics, computer science, sociology, and ethics. I think that's where we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
Faculty from these fields would work together to manage and teach the curriculum. That's an interesting one. What do you think of that?
I like the concept, especially because I think back to when I was at the university and I had a psychology class that had nothing to do with my major. I had a sociology class that had nothing to do with my major. It did wind up having a little bit to do with my minor, which was business. But, you know, I had a computer programming major, and I didn't feel like those classes benefited me because nobody had thought through how is this practical and applicable to a major other than a psychology major.
Yeah.
Or a sociology major. And so I like this concept. I do think that it may be difficult to do, because if you don't fit the exact niche that you're looking for, so you're going to teach writing. Well, it's great to have writing for programmers.
Right.
Okay. And it's great to have writing for science, and it's great to have writing for mathematicians, but how do you put them all in one class? Or do you as an instructor need to teach four different levels of writing one?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is one of those very like good on paper, but like when you start understanding the logistics of staffing classes and requirements for student capacity, and you know, like we can't just run classes that only have four people in them and all those kinds of things. And so, I do see lots of problems. And then when that happens for one class, then that's going to kind of throw a wrench in this whole bundle of courses that they're talking about potentially, right? So the concept is cool, and I definitely like the idea of customizing towards like, hey, you can, you know, like we're going to make this relevant towards what you're trying to learn, and exactly what you said, which is like, well, the theory might be a little better than the practice as we actually try to implement it. But it might, you know, like you could do it in some sections and you would have some high attended areas, but I'm not sure you could customize every section for each person's kind of, you know, quote unquote micro-credential zone, I guess.
Okay,
next up is pedagogy. The innovations described above are a departure from traditional practices at university. Faculty would be trained in the latest pedagogy and use of pedagogical tools and in the implementation of the approach described in this document. Duh. Please do this. Please just pursue your pedagogy. Like, make sure you know what you're doing, what's latest. That's it. I don't think we need to talk about that one very much. I hope we don't need to talk about that very much. All right. Next one up is a more equitable and holistic approach to faculty. So at these institutions, the practice of teaching will be central in the institutional ethos. Teachers will be celebrated and will constitute a single unified community without the usual divisions into regular and teaching faculty, adjuncts, etc., that undermine motivation and cohesion. Good luck.
So in reading this part, it was talking a lot about adjunct versus teaching faculty versus research faculty, and, you know, having different levels of faculty and how that's not very equitable.
Right.
And I can see that, especially at a university level, but frankly, also I'm not in that world. I can't speak to that positive nor negative nor anything else.
Yeah. This is, you know, there's a lot of work going on, for example, at our school in order to make adjunct faculty equitable, or, you know, to full-time faculty, for example, right? There's a lot of work going on at the union that's going on with those types of things. This particular thing, it sounds to me like they're talking about just stripping away ranks and stripping away maybe protections of some of those ranks too, or maybe giving protections to the other side. I'm not sure. From my understanding, the vast majority, well, I don't know about research institutions, but in the California community colleges, the vast majority of the money ends up going towards faculty pay, right? And those types of things, like something like 90% of our funding or something. And don't quote me, I'm not on those types of committees, so please don't quote me on that. But yeah, I could see where it's like you have these problems definitely that exist with these, and it's great to come up to a more equitable approach. I think there's going to be a lot more conversation on how that works and how it gets how it is evolved and developed, because this could also be taken in the other direction, which is to say, like, kind of stripping down of the value of, for example, for those who have tenure, right? Trying to strip out tenure as a concept, which, you know, there's good and bad in tenure, but the value of being a, you know, faculty choice, you know, respected professional is also part of that too. So anyways, it gets fairly complicated. I'm not sure which stand this particular one is taking, but we'll let people, the listeners, make their own decisions on what that means. Mm-hmm. Next one, cooperative education's co-ops. So cooperative education will be central to the new curriculum in these institutions. The co-ops will be managed and curated by the institutions to ensure that students receive both working experience and educational benefits while spending time at partner organizations. Co-op partners can be companies, museums, labs, or universities. That's kind of cool. Could be cool. Yeah.
I love the concept. The idea of being able to work and learn and get work experience while you're learning is a great concept. As long as that's what's happening.
Right.
I've also come across a lot of people who, as interns, they got to go get the coffee. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what does that teach you about anything? And other places, as interns, you're doing the full job of a paid person and you're basically replacing a paid person.
Yeah, there we go.
So, you know, this is one that I love the concept, the theory. I would just like to see the practice.
Right. Yeah.
We do have stuff like that all the time. We have internship programs that we do have, and it's a great idea. But
yeah, I think that, you know, just knowing human nature and a little bit of it, there is some concern that this would be taken advantage of. And especially if a student is paying for school and then they're going in and they're paying to do this internship, they're not only not getting paid potentially, they are paying. However, you know, applying a little creativity to this model, maybe those institutions are paying the tuition for the students who are interning and studying at the same time, right? And so then you might have some really cool things going on, because if they're paying for them, then they're going to want them to do better quality work than grabbing coffee, right? Because they're saying, hey, I'm investing in you and your future, and you can then later hopefully have something to bring to the table for this organization, which could potentially be a big game changer for a lot of places if they're able to organize that with, you know, again, it's like companies, museums, labs, universities. So it's like they'll have different relationships with each of these different types of institutions.
Right. And there's a number of industries that really do this quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking lawyers, and stuff like that. So this is happening to a certain extent, but I love the idea of trying to broaden that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So next one up, I don't have a lot to say about this one, Tim, and it's a little long, but here we go. So these institutions divide the academic year into a trimester calendar consisting of fall, spring, and summer. Each trimester is of equal length and slightly shorter than a regular semester at a university like MIT. The trimester calendar is more compatible with longer co-ops and also gives greater freedom in the use of facilities. Students will spend at least 4 trimesters out of 11 in co-op programs. The calendar accommodates breaks and holidays. So I definitely have a lot of conversations to have around calendars, but this particular one and this structure, it seems to me a little bit more like they're just kind of figuring out what they're struggling with at MIT and how they might be able to better apply or offer services on campus to students maybe longer. That's kind of what I'm pulling out of it.
That, and there is a lot of, even for us during the summer, it's often an 8-week class. Mm-hmm. And so you can't take your full complement of classes during the summer.
Right.
If you do, you're going to really pay for it. Mm-hmm. Mentally, emotionally, everything else. So breaking it into three trimesters instead of two semesters and a summer or something like that. I can see what they're talking about, but I think you're right. It's either how to spread that out across the year and spread out the learning, or it's to resolve some issues that they're coming up with.
Yeah. Yeah. So the different calendar options are interesting, and they're really kind of cool to see what happens, right? Like there's a lot of research that says shorter calendars, students are more successful with shortened calendars and those types of things. But again, this is quite a specific setup. And so, yeah. I'm not totally sure about that, but, let's continue. So, kind of connected to the co-op thing, I think, external partnerships. So because exposure to the workplace will be central, partnerships with outside entities will be established and managed proactively by the institution. These entities will provide not just co-op opportunities, but also recruitment and sabbatical possibilities for those faculty who choose to avail of them. As with apprenticeship programs in some countries of Western Europe, partner organizations will be asked to help create a nurturing environment for students. I like that. I like parts of that anyways. I think the idea of doing a sabbatical with a partnered organization that can build, you know, if you're building a sabbatical project that's meant to come back to the school and you're working with some organization that, that can provide something useful for that, I think that could be a really interesting way to do sabbaticals instead of, the way that I've understand them, or the way that I mostly see them implemented, which is just like you kind of go off by yourself and end up doing your own project.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested.
And it would build a relationship with those other entities.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, there's a lot of those. I remember when I was at the university, when the professors would consult with different companies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then those were the companies that certain students would go to work for. Uh-huh. And internships would happen with them and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just a matter of following it through and understanding what's happening.
I totally get what you're getting to, which is like the creep, right? Like the business creep and the grease palms and all these little, like, what is the relationship here actually going on? And is there transparency around that? There again, potential for bad behavior if you're not treating this carefully, potential, right? And again, all of these things are just interesting ideas. Like some of them could be really cool and well done, right? And other ones of them could be like, hey, how am I going to make some more money off of this? Or how am I going to, we're going to end up getting a contract out of this because of whatever, right? And then it's like, okay, we're messing with different things. So you always want to keep that like slightly skeptical eye when you're, when it's good to work with outside, and it's also something you want to be aware of. So, okay, next up, visiting faculty and fellows. Partner organizations can also serve as sources of teaching professionals. Reverse sabbaticals, from partner institutions will be welcomed. With professionals participating in teaching teams after an appropriate selection process and pedagogical and curricular training.
I personally like the idea of people, of having people who teach also be very knowledgeable in an area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like a concept of this. That doesn't mean, as we just said before, what does that really mean? How does that actually get implemented can be a big difference.
I'll tell you exactly what it means, Tim. I mean, this is what adjunct faculty were meant to be, right? Like that is how the whole adjunct process was built, was on the idea that, hey, I have a full-time job. I have an expertise in this. I'm going to come in at night once a week or twice a week and teach people about it because I'm an expert. And that's where the adjuncting started. And and the problems that currently exist with adjuncts, and again, the inequities, mm-hmm. and all of these other things, are the ultimate result of it, right? Good parts and bad parts, but like way too many adjunct faculties that are struggling to survive. And so like this is kind of just taking it back to step one and not really thinking it through necessarily. I mean, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. These are MIT professors, so I mean, they're hopefully thinking these through, but I'm just saying this right here is where adjuncting started, and I would be very concerned about how this gets implemented if you do something like this. All right. Mm-hmm. Next up, but I agree though, Tim, I do also agree that like, hey, if you have an expert, if you have someone local that really knows this thing and they're teaching one class, that could be really cool. And to have someone who's like, oh yeah, I am doing this work. You know, I took some community college classes, about 10 years ago. And, my teacher was a police officer, like a detective. And he was just bringing in so much relevant information into what he was talking about. And so yeah, anyways, next one, extracurricular activities. We describe an intentional and deliberate approach to extracurricular activities for students at these institutions. We recommend careful design, management, and delivery of these programs so that students receive the ideal combination of freedom and opportunities to grow.
Yeah, that's what I was doing too. I'm sitting here going, interesting.
I don't know.
I think of extracurricular activities as clubs and sports and stuff like that. And
isn't that what they already do? Like, don't they try to develop these well and try to, you know, like make the ideal combination of freedom and opportunities to grow through these types of clubs and activities?
I would think so.
Yeah. I don't get that. I mean, it's cool. Like, sure. Yes. Okay. Because it is a part of student life, but like, I don't see that as a new thing at all or anything that's very much worth commenting on. So, okay. And the last one here, facilities and infrastructure. It would be inappropriate for this document to delve too deeply into the brass tacks of building and running an institution, but we recommend modern, capital efficient approaches to facility and infrastructure. We also recommend partnering with other institutions such as city libraries for mutual benefit. Okay. So I don't know. They don't want to talk about what the buildings look like, I guess. I'll talk about it a little bit, because Tim, we have this conversation a lot, which is, you know, really we're talking about this idea of we're going to have online classes and online lecture classes for a long time. Those lecture-based classes should be online and for the most part should be online. And then, you know, I know that you like blended model, right? So like, hey, get your lecture online, then come in and we're going to do some work together on something, right? So that does seem to make sense. And that also frees up a lot of classroom space, right? And so anything that's going online by default means we don't need to use classroom spaces. So now, and this is where I step in, which is where we start talking about like, well, what is classroom design going to look like for the students who are coming into classes? What are buildings going to look like? What are the spaces going to serve purposes for these students? And we've talked about this in previous episodes, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about the 360 whiteboard things that we're doing. You and I just had a conversation on campus with some of the admin about like, let's look at room designs and all these types of things. And so I think we will start seeing more shift in how rooms look and how rooms and buildings are designed because we might not have as many on-campus students as we did in the past, but we might also have the funding to provide better pedagogical physical infrastructure for the students as well.
Right. Well, and that said, also the understanding that what works for one faculty member doesn't necessarily work for another. Mm-hmm. The fact that we roll in a laptop cart and every student uses a laptop in one class, that might not be appropriate in another class. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it is completely appropriate, but not in this particular session of this class.
Right.
You know, and so we have to think about those types of things and even take, for instance, bringing in 30 laptops into a classroom. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? What is the infrastructure that's needed? Well, they're not going to be plugged in. So that means you need to have two wireless hubs in that classroom. So now we're talking about a network infrastructure mm-hmm. that needs to be included. You need to make sure it doesn't bleed into the other classrooms. You've just got to pay attention to how a lot of different things work. And do you use projectors? Do you use big screen monitors or TVs? How do you get content out? All of those things need to be thought about and understood. And like I said, what works for one professor, what works for one discipline might not work for another one.
Well, and institution. I mean, you can keep moving that and up the line.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for sure, that's where that kind of the idea of like flexible spaces comes in and is important, right? But it's like, it can be hard, right, to build a flexible space because someone might say this is flexible and someone else might say, I can't do anything with this, right? Like this, you know, I need my, I'm going to be a little snarky here, but like, you know, I need my rigidity that I'm used to for whatever it is, because that's because that is the nature of what I'm teaching or whatever else it is. Right. And so, but yes, that can be tricky in order to like, how do you accommodate all things? Right. And there's no real such thing as that, but just as we do now, like we have, you know, this building is used for these types of purposes and that building is, you know, other people do different things over there. Right. And so I think that will need to continue to be a conversation for what things look like. And then also being able to provide spaces for online students. I think that's one thing that is being ignored heavily, which is like, oh, you're online, you're just going to take care of yourself and get it sorted out. And it's like, well, shouldn't the institution provide physical spaces for these students to come and be able to participate in their classes online as well, right? And not just trust it to them. I mean, we saw so much of this, like students, you know, crawling into their closet and having clothes hanging around them so that they could just have a tiny quiet place where they could sit and listen to you talk for 2 hours or whatever it is, right? And I feel like that conversation just got dropped. Like as soon as we came back, like, now we don't need to worry about those students anymore and we don't need to provide spaces for them anymore. It's like, well, hold on a second. Those students are still there. We're just forgetting about them all of a sudden. And so that's a concern for me for sure right there.
Well, and while we, for instance, in our case, we do have spaces that we're designing and building out for that. Mm-hmm. What about for faculty? Do they want, if they're sharing offices, how does that work? Mm-hmm. If they're, you know, at home. I personally don't want to work from home. There's a lot of different reasons why working from home doesn't work for me right now in my life. Now, does that mean in the future that won't be the case? No, it just means right now mm-hmm. I would prefer to go into the office every day. Yeah. But if I'm on meetings all day long, if I was going to be teaching a class, if I was going to be whatever, where I'm constantly talking, my office mate needs to find another place to work. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear me all day and stuff like that. So I understand that this is both faculty and students really thinking about that infrastructure. What is it going to take?
Yeah, big time. I mean, there's so much to this and so much to kind of consider. Like it is its own whole issue, mm-hmm. which maybe is why they didn't put it a lot.
Want to talk about it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's going to be a little bit beyond the scope of this. So I get that too. But anyways, so those are kind of the overview, right? Like that's the executive summary and the main points that they're getting to. And I think all of these are interesting. Again, not necessarily pushing, hopefully, for any one thing directly, but kind of just throwing out some ideas. Some of these are make me a little concerned, and some of them are interesting, and some of them are great, right? And so there's a whole range of ideas inside of here, but I think what we were talking about earlier, Tim, is like we can't make moves forward until we start talking with other institutions, seeing what other people are doing, considering the ideas, even if we don't like them, like, oh, well, let's think about them. Let's just put it in our head and hold it and see what happens. And see if that maybe sparks a version of that that could be improved upon or, implemented in a different way as well. Right. And so I think this is what we're trying to hopefully share. Although I could imagine a couple people listening to this and going, what? You can't do that. So if you're frustrated by any of these, me and Tim didn't write it. We're just talking about it. Send the messages to MIT. So lots to think about here, lots to consider, and you know, we'll see where things actually end up in the future.
And we'd love to know your thoughts on it.
Yeah. But don't be mad at us. It's not, no, we didn't do anything bad. We're good. All right, let's jump out.
Thank you for listening today. In this episode, we talked about what the future of higher education institutions will possibly look like. For more information on this show, please visit our website at thehigheredtechpodcast.com. There you'll find our podcasts and links to the information we've covered.
As always, we do want your feedback, so please go to thehigheredtechpodcast.com and let us know your thoughts. And if you have ideas for future shows, there's a link over there where you can drop us your ideas.
For everyone at IVC that's listening, if you need help with technology questions, please contact IVC Technical Support. If you have questions about technology in your classroom, please stop by the new IVC Training Center in A322 or contact me, Tim Van Norman, at tvannorman@ivc.edu.
And if you want to reach out to me about the show, you can find me online, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Tim Van Norman.
And I'm Brent Warner, and we hope this episode has helped you on the road from possibility to actuality. Take care, everybody.